CJAM 99.1 FM programming is hosted almost exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CJAM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
And welcome to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, Michael Ring will be telling us a little bit about Disabled in Action. So what can you tell me about Disabled in Action?
Disabled in Action is been around for over 40 years, and we're one of the organizations that got the Americans with Disabilities Act passed back in the 60s and 70s and 80s. That was our main goal. Lots of civil actions, disruptive behavior, things that got the attention of the government and the press.
So, over time, have you seen a change in the dynamic of what's needed for persons with disabilities?
Well, I don't know if I'm the best person to answer that because I acquired my disability 10 years ago. And honestly, and unfortunately, I wasn't really paying attention to disability issues before I was part of the club. But I can, from talking to people, I can definitely say that people with disabilities, for no reason other than unable to have access, were stuck in their home, unable to get out because their homes had stairs and no one thought to put in a ramp or an elevator or to move.
So,
and that's changed a lot.
If you're comfortable sharing a little of your diagnosis journey, I'd love to hear about
it. Oh, sure. It was 10 years ago, in May of 2014, that I had a food poisoning that triggered an autoimmune condition called Guillain-Barré syndrome. After my immune system, you know, did all the nasty things it does to the bacteria of the food poisoning, it got a little confused and decided that the sheaths of my motor nerves were the new enemy. So after a few days of being pretty violently ill, I got better, and then I started tripping over things, stumbling and dropping things, and my arms and legs just stopped working. I literally stumbled into my doctor's office. And she correctly diagnosed me with Guillain-Barré syndrome because I told her about the food poisoning a couple weeks earlier and stressful job and all the life problems. And she sent me to the hospital, to the ER, where they admitted me right to the intensive care unit. I spent about a week there. And then when I walked into the hospital, and by the next day I couldn't walk at all. In a couple of days, I was unable to press the button to call a nurse. And then lots of various medical treatments and some kind of experimental. But I wound up in a nursing home for a couple of months. And then after 135 days, I improved a little to the point where I was only a one-person transfer between a bed and a wheelchair, I went home as a wheelchair user. And then over the next year, I recovered enough that I was able to go back to running marathons. I run them now, but at about half the speed I used to. I used to be a 4-hour marathoner, and now I'm a 8 or 9 hour guy. So I'm way in the back of the pack.
So,
And then I got involved in disability rights activism. When I came home from the hospital, I saw problems for myself, and in solving them, I realized, and so did other people, that I was solving global problems. So I was kind of recruited into Disabled in Action.
So in your time solving disability problems and being an advocate, has there been any success moment that stands out for you?
Oh, yeah. One of my first issues that I wanted to solve, here in New York City, we have something called AccessoRide, where since the subway system is really useless if you're a wheelchair user or if you just can't walk up and down stairs, they provide basically door-to-door transportation. It's a shared ride service. It comes late. It's not perfect. But while you're a user of AccessoRide, they give you a Metro card, you know, the way to pay for the subway, and it's basically free for people with disabilities to ride the subway or get on city buses. Because it's not like they're giving us a gift. They're basically saying, if you can take public transportation, we'd be much happier if you do that, because you'd save us literally hundreds of dollars a trip by us sending you a van. So I was using the card, and I have limited use of my hands, so I drop things a lot. And I misplaced the card, and I thought I lost it, so I went on the web, I called them, and they told me how to download a form that I declared it lost. I had to bring the form, I had to go and get a postal money order for something like $9 and mail that and the form back to the MTA. And 2 weeks later, they sent me a new card. And a few months later, and I had found the card before the new one came in the mail, and it wouldn't work anymore. When you tried to use it on the subway, it said, see agent. They deactivated it because it was lost. And a few months later, I lost it again, and I repeated this process. And then, yet again, a few months later, I lost my card because my hands don't work very well. I drop things. But the new card didn't come in the mail. And I called them and I said, hey, where's my card? And they said, oh, you have to wait 180 days. And I was confused. I said, well, this happened to me before. And it came in a couple of weeks. And they said, yeah, the first two times you need a replacement, it comes in 14 days. After that, it's a 180-day waiting period because we have to prevent fraud. And I didn't know what fraud they thought I was committing. It was my old card, which I found again. It didn't work. I couldn't use subway. And after told me that, in the past, AccessoRide users were given a piece of cardboard, a paper card, to wave at the bus driver or to wave at the token booth clerk, you know, in the subway to let us on for free. But those are obsolete, and everyone got an electronic card. But if you'd lose your cardboard card, it can be used by another person. So if you are a chronic loser of cards, you could be committing fraud. But that was the 90s, and now it's, you know, 20 years later, and we have a mechanism to stop lost cards from being used. So I realized that I had complained all I could, even after I got my new card in the mail 6 months. So I decided to go to an MTA board meeting. Any human being gets 2 minutes to testify at these public meetings. You have to register and take your turn. And I rehearsed my 2-minute speech about this problem. And when I was finished with the speech, which was basically the 2-minute version of what I just said, two people followed me back to the where I was sitting. One was the director of AccessoRide, who asked me to explain the problem a little better to him because he was unaware of this. And over the course of the next year, they changed the policy because of what I said. So that was I felt very happy. And he actually said, because I was complaining about something that didn't affect me anymore, he really wanted to solve the problem. It was worthy. I wasn't a complainer, I was an advocate. And also at the same time, Jean Ryan, who was the president of Disabled in Action, spoke to me, and she told me I was really good at complaining and advocating, and asked me if I wanted to hang out with other people who did that. And I started going to Disabled in Action meetings, and eventually I joined the board. And now I'm on the advisory committee to the MTA, where people with disabilities, you know, they listen to us. And we also get to realize that the MTA, you know, the state agency that runs mass transit in New York City, has a bigger budget than a third of the states in the country, and probably a lot of countries. So you can't make things change fast just because they're not right. But I feel like I've accomplished something.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
In this segment of our show, Zach Ballow will be telling us a little bit about the recent CICE 10th anniversary celebration at St. Clair College.
So you attended the recent CICE 10-year anniversary. What were some of the highlights for you going in?
Some of the highlights was, you know, obviously I was up there emceeing, so that's one highlight. But I think really one of the big highlights for me was seeing everybody all together in one space, especially people I haven't seen for decades. And it was just really nice to see everybody and, you know, reconnect.
So, in terms of accessibility, how'd you find the venue they chose for this? For students with disabilities or graduates with disabilities, you'd think that would be first and foremost on everyone's mind.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great venue. It was, you know, fully accessible. There was nothing wrong there.
So, was this your first experience working with CIC as a department, or had you been previously tied to it?
No, this is the first time I've actually been able to, you know, do something for them, because, you know, Kathy emailed me saying, like, hey, we want you to be the master of ceremonies, and it was a unanimous decision. I immediately had to say yes. I mean, there was no way I was going to pass that up. I mean, I wouldn't have missed that gathering for the world, quite frankly. So it was really just a bonus, you know, them wanting me to be a part of the ceremony.
So why do you think it's important for students with disabilities and graduates with disabilities to have events like this and make their presence known in the community?
I think it's important because when you take a look at the hierarchy of, you know, students with disabilities, they're at the very bottom of it. I know, especially for me, like going through high school and stuff like that, it was like nobody really paid attention to us. Nobody, and it was just like, just get them through the system. Whereas the top of the totem pole was always the smart kids and, you know, the smart people. And I think having something like this, you know, showing that, hey, we can thrive and we can be just as better as the smart people in our society, because, you know, we're so often looked down and just, you know, we're thriving. I mean, I really wouldn't be where I am today without the CICE program. We're different. But, hey, let's flaunt it. Let's really make our presence known at that point.
So, if you're comfortable sharing a little bit of your own story with CIC, I'd love to hear it.
So the CICE program, like, I really didn't know anything about it until I was with the Canadian Mental Health Association, and, like, everybody that I knew was being like, hey, like, you need to check this out. Like, I had pamphlets and flyers up the wazoo, basically. And so, like, hey, you need to check this out. check out this program. And I'm like, okay, so me and my mom, we went to one of the CICE open houses, and we knew then and there that it would be a great fit for me. Like, it was tailored to my needs. And I applied. I actually originally didn't get in. I was not accepted, but I was put on a wait list, and I eventually was accepted and started in September of 2015. And I didn't know what I really wanted to do while we were applying for it, because it was like just this. It's like, okay, do you want to do culinary? I'm like, no. Do you want to do horticulture? No, I hate it outside. Okay, do you want to do general arts and science, which was the electives at that point? I'm like, all right, yeah, do that. So we applied, made it through the program, and it was honestly the best experience that I could have ever had in college. I mean, I was already kind of like, we had the learning facilitators, but I was kind of like already on my own at that point. But I mean, I love the people I went to school with. I still talk to some of them. And honestly, just doing the electives really set me up for not having to do them now, because in journalism, you're required so much. And I'm like, those are done. Those are over with. And you know what? Honestly, I recommend it to people. Like, I'm always out there being like, hey, you should check out this program or check out this program. And it was just a lot of fun and really great and set me up for where I am today.
So, is there any success moment or story that stands out for you you'd like to share?
Success moment? I guess just graduating, getting through it and graduating. Really, I know I sound like I'm joking, but that's actually probably like I got to graduate or college. I ended up like with a certificate, but I ended up just graduating, just making it through and trying, you know, not to fall on my face. I think that's pretty successful in and of itself.
So, do you have any advice for those out there just starting their journey, asking some of the same questions you might have had? Can I succeed, or is there a future for me as a student with a disability?
There is definitely a future with, you know, you as a student with a disability. I mean, going through this program and, you know, just don't be afraid to ask for help. Don't be afraid to, you know, speak up. Or, I mean, there's definitely times where I wish I had, you know, looking back, I wish I had that kind of like that, kind of that stamina. But yeah, I mean, you know what? I do suffer from a disability, from a learning disability, and I went full throttle into journalism. I went, like, there is definitely a future if you have a disability. And really, my one big piece of advice: show up, do the work, and you'll be fine, and you'll get good grades, and you can really overachieve. But yeah, so just show up. That's the main thing. Do the work, get good grades, and just, you know, don't be afraid to ask for help.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Thanks.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
The Windsor Amputee Support Group aims to provide a place where amputees can share their experiences.
The WASG arranges guest speakers, social gatherings, and a peer support mentor program, which is available to both amputees and their families.
Our office is now at Hotel de Grasse Healthcare on Prince Road. Appointments are required.
To contact the Windsor Amputee Support Group, call 226-347-6678.
Or email windsoramps@gmail.com.
For more information, visit windsoramps.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard about Disabled in Action from Michael Ring, and Zach Ballow told us a little bit about a recent CICE event at St. Clair College. In this segment of our show, Trinity Lothian will be telling us a little bit about wheelchair fencing. So what can you tell me about your experiences with wheelchair fencing?
So I started wheelchair fencing a little bit over 2 years ago. And when I started, it was just me at the club who was the only wheelchair fencer. I reached out to my coach, Paul, who you already spoke to, and I asked if there could be wheelchair fencing in Ottawa, and he said, for sure, it's just fencing sitting down. So I came to the club and started fencing everybody else while I was in my chair. And since then, I've competed all over the world, essentially. It really started from nothing, like 2 years ago, and I've been able to compete in so many places since then.
So, do you find that it's comparable to the able-bodied sport, that it requires a fair amount of athletic ability?
Yeah, definitely. I think, obviously, I can't compare it to standing fencing, because I never really did that, but when I have able-bodied fencers come and fence me, they always, without a doubt, say that it's either harder than they expected, or, wow, that's such a good workout, I didn't expect to be this sore. It's really not at all what they expect, and lots of people choose to fence me. They're like, it really, really helps my abs, or like, I really need a left arm workout, I'm going to fence Trinity. So they find that it's kind of a bit harder than it looks.
So, for yourself, as an athlete, what have the benefits that you've been experienced, that you've experienced?
I think there's, like, of course, the physical benefits of, like, being more active, working out, getting stronger, stamina, endurance, things like that. But I think beyond that, the bigger impacts for me have been, like, the mental and social benefits of, before, I was doing mostly individual sports, like training on my own, and there's really something to be said about training in a group of people who you can, like, laugh with, make jokes with. It really encourages you to go out more, so I definitely enjoy my training and going to the club a lot more, and that just, like, helps my mental health to be in a group of other people and do things, like, with others that I think the mental benefit has really been the biggest. And even, like, going to competitions, I look forward to that, not just for competing, but to see all my friends from other countries who I only get to see at competitions. It just really helps my mental health.
So that brings up an interesting point. For the competitions you've traveled to, have you found the facilities generally accessible?
Yeah, of course. It's probably a requirement when choosing a venue, but I found, like, the best venue for me was in Brazil, their, like, Paralympic Center in Sao Paulo. The accessibility of that center is, like, unlike anything I've seen in Canada. I'm like, I wish we had something like this center where absolutely everything is accessible and designed, like, specifically for parasports, which was crazy, like, amazing for me to see, like, the tennis courts were labeled, like, wheelchair tennis courts, not just tennis courts, and everything was designed, like, very specifically with para in mind, where there's nothing like that here in Canada. Of course, other countries, the venues for competitions usually just, like, a regular gym or a hotel conference center, something like that, where it's typically fairly accessible, but sometimes I'm just blown away by kind of how behind Canada is, especially in terms of parasport infrastructure.
So, if you could see anything added to Canada's parasport infrastructure, what would it be?
I think right now it seems like everything para is an add-on, where it's like, oh, okay, and para, or oh, okay, and this. It's never, like, para first and foremost. So I think just having things, like, specifically purpose-built and, like, with the specific intention of this is a para space, sure, there can be able-bodied basketball at the wheelchair basketball court, but first and foremost, it's built for a wheelchair sport, I think is something that other countries have that Canada doesn't, that would be kind of interesting to see.
So, in all your competitions and all your fencing, is there any success moment that stands out for you?
I think the biggest one for me was the under 23 world championships last summer in Korea when I won bronze, and that one was special to me, especially because it was a mixed category A and B competition, and I'm category B, so have like a higher level of impairment, so it was really special to me to win the medal at the competition where I was against people with a lesser degree of impairment.
So do you have any advice for young athletes out there who might be starting their journey?
I think just, like, try everything. Like, go for whatever you want and try everything. I didn't try too many parasports before I got settled on fencing, and sometimes wish that I tried more things. But, yeah, I would say try everything and make sure that it's a sport that you're happy with once you settle with it.
So, have you found the skills you learned in wheelchair fencing to be adaptable in day-to-day life?
Definitely. It definitely helped me, like, talking physical skill-wise, it definitely helped me, like, with my mobility and movement and just also knowing my limits when I started fencing. I was also fairly new to my disability and would push myself, like, beyond my limits of, like, balance and, like, where I could reach for things in my chair and things like that. But with fencing, really learned my body a lot better and was able to translate that to my daily life and how far I could essentially push myself. But it also definitely helped, like, stamina, things like that, day to day. And even, like, mentally, like, problem solving and things like that definitely improved. Even days when I'm, like, really irritable, I know, okay, I just need fencing, and then I'll calm down. So that definitely translates over and helps.
Thanks. Like, to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Friends, I always love it when something new was added to disability society. Trinity taking a stab at adding wheelchair fencing is a great example to me. She wanted to do what her heart told her to do. Therefore, she found a way to do it. And that's what a person with a disability should be doing. Not asking what the limitations are. Asking what the adaptations are. Asking, how can we make this work at a level that's as universal as possible? Creating something to benefit exclusively the disability community is fine. However, creating something that benefits in a universal way can be something a lot more extensive and inclusive. When it comes to inclusivity, people just need to keep open minds and open hearts. I mean, able-bodied players, for example, playing alongside wheelchair athletes in a basketball game might be a new experience for them, but it's also a new insight for them. It's a new opportunity to look at the world in a way they potentially never had before. An opportunity to understand different types of athletes out there, knowing that the way one person plays the game is not necessarily the way another does. And in that way, respect and community are suddenly fostered within a person. But understanding this applies to all facets of life. Understanding people aren't going to necessarily respond to situations in a formulaic manner. They're not always going to do what's socially norm or accepted. And understanding that, you understand the person. Accepting that sometimes people are going to say something a little outlandish or do something based on the fact that they require that extra support. It isn't meant to be hostile. It isn't meant to offend anybody. It is meant to make progress for disability society. The doors will remain closed as long as no one bothers to open them. And honestly, what Trinity did, adding something so simple as a sport she wanted to try, did, in fact, begin to change the landscape. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks.
We'll see you next week.